Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mark Grody with you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. And joining me now from Arizona, doing what he does, it is 670, The Score. Bruce Levine covering the Cubs and White Sox in AZ. You can find Bruce on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. He hosts Inside the Clubhouse Saturdays with Matt Spiegel, and we'll find out what's going down on Inside the Clubhouse this week in just a little bit. Bruce, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Mark. It's been a very busy day here. The Addison Russell situation and press conference certainly took a big chunk of the day out, and obviously national news when he talks for the first time in probably 4 months since he was suspended. And it's it was an interesting day today for sure.
Bruce, what would you say is the headline from Addison Russell's talk today?
Russell asking for a second chance. I think a lot of people took exception to the fact that he sounded like it was a practice speech and that he was prepared to talk to the media at length about being wrong and sorry. But, you know, again, I feel for him from this perspective. He's a baseball player, made a big mistake, maybe multiple mistakes, asking for a second chance, not a professional broadcaster, really doesn't know how to go about this. And I'm giving him a mulligan, not for what he did, but for his press conference. I think he's being berated for being too practiced, too polished in the press conference and not saying enough, not telling everybody exactly how he feels in this matter. I think he did a lot of apologizing to his ex-wife. I think he apologized to the Cub fans and his teammates and the Cub front office. Let's let him do the work. You know, that's how I look at it. And again, it's easy for me to say I wasn't the one who was victimized here. It's up to her to be the one that says she accepts his apology and that she believes he's truly trying to be a better man.
Bruce, isn't the practice part completely on the Chicago Cubs and not Addison Russell?
I don't know if it was the Cubs. It could have been Scott Boras, his agent, and people that he hired. We don't know. I mean, I don't know that. I think he probably asked for help because this was going to be a difficult time. I think there were a couple times where he had to compose himself and stop himself from possibly crying. Mark, I'll ask you this. Do you think if he cried and he was really showed a lot of emotion, that people would have thought better of it?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, if when anybody shows true human emotion just anywhere in life, right, in any walk, in any circumstance, yeah, for better or for worse, we tend to give them more of the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
I think people really want their pound of flesh on this. And I think it's his ex-wife that should be the person that says he deserves a second chance, that she believes that he's going to be a good father to her child and that he's going to really do what he has to do to be a better person. I don't, you know, the general public, you know, judges him because he plays Cub baseball for the Cubs. I thought the best thing was when I asked him about the baseball sense, he said, let me become a better person and work at this and the baseball part will follow. I thought that was probably thing I most got out of this thing from Addison Russell. And you dealt with Addison for a number of years. You know him. He was pretty easy to talk to, but he didn't get very deep. You know, you really never felt that you were really close to the guy because he was you know, a little standoffish, but never a bad guy. I'm sure your experience was probably the same, right?
Yeah, totally, totally. And you nailed it. I mean, Addison Russell was always extremely accommodating. I don't remember him saying no very often to interviews, you know, no matter what the circumstance was. But he was soft-spoken, didn't have a ton to say, and that's totally and completely okay. That's the way he is. And right. I get it. And you know what, Bruce, I'll say, I thought Addison Russell did use a lot of the right words. If he was coached, that's fine, and you know what? Some of it's necessary to make sure that he constantly referred to the victim and using Melissa's name and using the word accountability. I thought that was really important to say. Obviously, now he has to go forward and continue to do it. My question to you is, are reporters going to be allowed to continue to ask Addison, you know, privately on any given day, you know, after the suspension or even during spring training when he is full force out there playing? Are you guys going to be able to go up to him privately and say, how are things going? What's new? Or is it off limits now? Was today it, in other words?
I don't know. You know, I've never had anybody with the Cub organization in the 35 years I've covered there tell me not to ask a question, okay? I've heard people say, you know, I've heard players say, I'm not going to talk about this anymore. You know, for simple things like I don't talk to the media 2 days before I pitch, Danny Jackson. I don't talk to media people 3 days before I pitch, you know, things like that. You know, innocuous things. And then I've heard guys say, well, it's a personal matter. I'm not going to talk about it. I don't know. I don't know how much he will be able to handle conversations about updating people where he's at in his rehabilitation. He's got a lot of work to do still. Seems like he's doing it. The baseball part, he's got all spring training to practice with his teammates. We know he's going to miss the first 28 days of the year because of the fact that he's suspended. And we'll just take it from there. I would, on Inside the Clubhouse tomorrow with Matt Spiegel, I'm going to ask people to tell us what they expect from Addison Russell. I think that's a fair question. What does the general public expect from him at this point? Does he deserve that second chance? If you agree he does, then what is it that you want for his ex-wife and his family, and what type of reassurance do you want so he can try to move on and be the person he wants to be?
It's a great question. We are talking to the Scorer's Bruce Levine, covering the Cubs and White Sox in Arizona. I'm Mark Grody here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. One more thing on Russell as it pertains actually to the baseball side. Javier Baez obviously is going to be the shortstop for the Cubs until Addison Russell returns. Or will he ever give up that spot again? Because we know how much Javier Baez likes playing shortstop. In other words, do you think Addison Russell will ever be the starting shortstop for the Chicago Cubs again?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mark. I just don't know. I mean, he came up as a shortstop, but when he came to the Cubs in 2014, the starting shortstop, I think it was 2015, the starting shortstop was Starlin Castro. So he was switched to second base. And at that time, they worked with him very hard, and he became a real good second baseman. You wonder if that's going to be part of spring training, that he also goes back to master second base, because even though he has as much range as any shortstop in the game, and he's a very fluid shortstop, one of the better ones, his throwing, you know, with a shoulder issue that he's had his whole life, is inconsistent, almost 90% of his errors come from throwing. So would it be better? Would he be a better player as a second baseman than a shortstop? I think they have the next 6 weeks here in spring training, and then they have 28 days before he comes back to the regular team, if he makes it all the way back in his rehabilitation, to find out if second base maybe is the role for him in the future.
One more Cubs question, and then I'm going to ask you a few things on the White Sox. So White Sox fans, stand by. The one guy I want to ask you about is on the Cubs pitching staff, specifically in the bullpen. His name is Carl. Carl Edwards, C.J. Edwards, Carl Edwards Jr., however you'd like to refer to him. I always love talking to Carl. Where is he right now? Because every year I think he's like the wild card, because at times he's the best pitcher in that bullpen. But last year, we know he had his struggles. He walked a ton of guys. Where do you think Carl is, and how does he fit in with his bullpen this year?
You know, another really good question, Mark, because remember back in 2017, the playoffs, he kind of lost it, you know. A guy that really didn't walk a lot of people, all of a sudden he started walking people at the end of that year and into the playoffs, to the point where Joe had to start taking him out after one batter that he walked. So it became, you know, kind of an issue in his head. And I think he needs to, you know, maybe the mental edge department of the Chicago Cubs has worked with him on, you know, regaining his ability to concentrate and to have confidence in his pitches, because he was a strike-throwing machine. As you said, his stuff was electric, you know, when he was on, you know, outstanding breaking ball, moving fastball at 97, kind of hard to pick up, you know, a lot of moving body parts and everything. So from that perspective, they were trying to refine that guy, and that's up to Tommy Hotovy and some of the people, you know, the pitching coach and some of the metrics people, to maybe help him find his way back to where he needs to be.
Hey, and update me really quickly. I know that it's so early in spring training and there's no exact date for this, but what's the rough draft timeline for Brandon Morrow to return to the Cubs?
I would say third week to the end of April. I think that's how it looks right now. There's, you know, there's a couple things, Mark. Number one, he's coming off a elbow cleanup surgery. An injury that kept him out from July 15th till the end of the season last year. And then you put into the equation the conditions that you pitch in April, okay, especially at Wrigley Field or the other Midwest places you go. And you really want a guy coming back from elbow surgery to be pitching in raw conditions in April. And I think part of it is just a plan to get him to be 100% healthy, and also on top of that, pitch in the best conditions possible.
Talking to Bruce Levine of The Score, to the White Sox side of the world. Bruce, what is the latest on Manny Machado and the potential of him landing with the White Sox? Anything new?
Yes, he still has not signed.
Moving on, no.
Yeah. Well, from what I understand, Mark, the original offer is still on the table. There's been no negotiation for it. They haven't asked for a counteroffer that I'm aware of. And it's still there. And this is over a month old, this offer that's been out there. It's a seven-year offer. The money has been talked up and back between $175 and $210 million. Someone else reported 8 years, $250. I'm pretty sure that's not true. So they're waiting with their offer. Teams like San Diego, San Francisco, you know, getting in with Harper and Machado. I know San Francisco's interested in Harper. We know that San Diego's interested in both. We heard that the Yankee offer in December was a seven-year or eight-year offer. So there's a lot of moving parts. And I think the one thing that people should really look at is that Dan Lozano, the agent for Manny Machado, and Scott Boras, the agent for Bryce Harper, neither one of them wants to go move first because they're afraid to leave money on the table and years on the table for their player. Now they're in that area. I mean, camps have begun. Position players all have to report by Monday. And wherever these guys go, they're going to be late arrivals to arguably, most likely, new teammates, new cities, new towns, new fans, where they're not going to have much time to catch their breath. So, you know, it's kind of a disservice that's being done. I'm not saying they don't have the right to hold out till mid-March, but are you going to really be prepared to come into camp, get to know all your teammates, be ready to go no matter who you are if you're reporting, you know, 10 days or 2 weeks before the season starts?
Yeah, no doubt. It is an odd precedent, or hopefully it's not necessarily a precedent, but it started last year, obviously, with Jake Arrieta and others, and it continues this year.
It didn't work out well for Arrieta last year.
It didn't, you say?
No, it did not. I mean, he was 10-11 with an ERA probably near 4. So, I mean, that wasn't exactly the season they thought they were paying $25 million a year for.
Yeah, that's true. And I know he said he was playing with some sort of injury, I think, in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and then he hurt himself in the offseason, had meniscus surgery on his knee. And he's going to be, you know, hopefully ready for the beginning of the season, but not before that.
All right, a couple other questions on the White Sox, Bruce. And there's a lot of attention being given to the young players that are coming up, and justifiably so. There should be. One guy I want to ask you about, though, is one of those forgotten guys, and certainly not by the White Sox, but it's Carlos Rodon. What are realistic expectations for him this year? Because I still find him to be incredibly intriguing in his ceiling.
I agree. I mean, I think his stuff is electric when he's healthy and he's on the mound. And if he, I'll just put it this way, if he's on the mound 32 times for the White Sox, he's going to win 15 ball games. Mm. That's how I look at him, because he's got the nastiest wipeout slider, you know, one of the best in the game. If he can keep himself physically on the field and he's in good shape, again, you know, he has to be in really good shape. You know, the weight has been a little bit of an issue recently in the last year or so, and it's not that he's not coming in shape. I think the body type just keeps changing, and it's a big lower half of the body. So from that perspective, if he can pitch 32 times, he's going to be the ace of that staff. That's how good his stuff is. The problem is he hasn't been able to stay out there healthy. He's had shoulder issues, and you know, he just needs to be out there 32 times, and he can be that pitcher.
What about Lucas Giolito? Can he? How's the Aaron Water show going out there, Bruce?
It's just it's a chopper. It's not a motorcycle, honey. It's a chopper.
Who do you?
Baby.
Who are you hanging out with over there, Bruce?
I'm up at Kirlin meeting some friends for dinner.
Oh, so, nice.
I'm just hanging out with you on the phone until then.
But, I appreciate it, Bruce.
The Giolito?
Giolito. He's got to get that ERA now, obviously.
He's got to get out of the early innings. You know, we saw a guy that, you know, first inning blues and, you know, walking people and wild pitch. He led the league in walks, wild pitches, earned run average. That's not great. He also led the White Sox in wins with 10. That's better. He was able to go through the bumps and bruises, and they absorbed the bad because they could. That was part of the method of them bringing their young pitchers along. This year, he's going to have to earn more to stay out there. He's really going to have to accomplish some things. He's got good stuff. He doesn't have the 97 mile an hour fastball he had when he signed with Washington, but he gets it up to 93, 94, and he's got a good breaking stuff. He has great presence out there. They just have to get him going north and south rather than east and west. What does that mean? It means that he's left some of his arm behind when he's throwing. He needs to get, you know, a better balance going forward off of the rubber when he throws the ball rather than leaving it back on the side.
Bruce, you mentioned that you and Matt Spiegel will be discussing Addison Russell and opening it up to callers tomorrow on Inside the Clubhouse. What else is going down on the show tomorrow morning?
Mike Montgomery back into the bullpen, arguably one of the most important pitchers for the Cubs as far as stepping in for Darvish last year when he got injured, and really being the man throwing in 19 games is going to be one of our guests. Peter Gammons, the great Peter Gammons, will be another, and we'll be taking the usual phone calls and having fun and just talking baseball for 2 hours. Mark, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for having me on tonight.
Thanks, Bruce. Separate checks, my friend. Always remember that.
I got it.
Always good to hear from Bruce Levine in Arizona, as he is camped out there. He has his cottage, and yeah, I mean, in reporter lifestyle, separate checks is an incredibly important thing, because we all have our own little accounts that we have to deal with. It will be interesting. I mean, there are so many really obvious hit you in the face headlines when it comes to the White Sox right now, with the first of them being, will Manny Machado land with the White Sox? And then you get into the development of guys like Yoan Moncada, and, you know, what is going to happen with Jimenez? When is he going to come up? That is Eloy. And then, you know, you forget about guys like Carlos Rodon and the fact that he could still have a spectacular ceiling. Lucas Giolito has to be better, because really, really, for what they gave up and what's going on with the rotation, Giolito has to be good. I'm looking forward to the development of Reynaldo Lopez, too, to see if he can continue to contain his stuff. And, you know, I guess Ivan Nova is James Shields this year. Ivan Nova gonna be that guy that is the example and that the other younger players can look up to. All right, we're going to take a break right now. Coming up here very soon, though, we are going to talk to DePaul head coach Dave Lato, that coach again of the Blue Demons, the Dave Lato Show, coming up in just a bit here. I'm Mark Grody, and this is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Going hard on corn. This is one of my key workout songs. I need that extra 7 or 8 minutes on the treadmill. Oh, corn is an excellent choice. It's Mark Grody with you until 10 o'clock. Coming up momentarily here in just a few minutes, actually. We got a little while here still before we will be joined by the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons. That is Dave Lato. We'll talk Blue Demons basketball here with you in just a couple of minutes. I have learned about myself having a little bit more time off now that the Bears aren't playing. I basically work 7 days a week during the football season, and then it comes to a screeching halt where I am doing nothing. And those first few days off are great, maybe even the first couple of weeks where I just really don't have to do anything. But what I've learned about myself is that I'm not one of those people who would enjoy early retirement, that when I saw the upcoming schedule, I was very excited that I would actually be working. I know that sounds crazy. Yes, I enjoy the time off, but man, it can get a little bit boring. So I'm here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Tomorrow, I will be on with Julie DeCaro. I'll be playing the part of Maggie tomorrow, which apparently means I have to bring in baked goods. So I will be on with Julie tomorrow from 2 o'clock until 5 o'clock. And we're whipping up a show here as we speak for tomorrow. And I know that Bruce Levine will be a part of it. You'll probably hear Bruce Levine just about every day. As he covers the Cubs and White Sox in Arizona. We'll talk a little bit of NFL. I'm pumped up because the Combine is coming up in a couple of weeks, and I think that it's not as exciting as it normally would be because the Bears don't have a first-round pick, but they go 3, 4, 5, and a couple of seventh-round picks. That's what it is for the Bears this year. But I think that it's still as intriguing because there's been some hits for Ryan Pace, the Bears GM, after number 3, for instance, Eddie Jackson, Tariq Cohen, Jordan Howard. Do you want to put Bilal Nichols in there even? I mean, he was a strong contributor as a fifth-round pick last year for the Bears as well. So I actually do think it's intriguing. And what position will the Bears draft? I mean, there's a lot of different directions you can go to, but my answer to that question right now is the Bears will pick in the third round whatever it is that they feel Mitchell Trubisky needs, because that's what it's about. You know, last year or this season, the defense dominated for the Bears, and the offense showed some really strong, encouraging, improved signs and having better talent from Mitchell Trubisky to Allen Robinson to a continuing to develop and turn into a star Tariq Cohen to Anthony Miller, the rookie wide receiver last year. All those guys that were brought in by the Bears were smart moves, but it's still a work in progress. It still has to get better. So really, to put it very simply, what is it that you need, Mitchell Trubisky? Do you need an offensive lineman? Do you need another wide receiver? I tend to think that they could still use another big body in the receiving core, whether that's a tight end or just a big-bodied wide receiver. And I only say that because you started to see a really good rapport between Mitchell Trubisky and Allen Robinson, who does have that thing with a little bit more height, a little bit more athleticism, that go up and get it type of guy, making impossible type of catches. I think that's really important to have for a young quarterback, to have that guy, that dependable of a guy that even when he's, as Allen Robinson told me this year, he says that he feels like he is open on every single play. Not that he's demanding the ball on every single play, but he's one of those guys who needs such little margin, such little room to make a play. So to me, it is 100% absolutely in this draft in terms of your high pick third round, yeah, that's relative terms, or even free agency, it is about number 10. It is about your quarterback. It is about continuing to make that even better than the improvements that we saw last year. All right, the music. That's my team, man. All Blue Demons fight song. It is time now for the Dave Leto Show. Dave Leto is the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons, and he joins us now here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dave, it is great to have you on. How are you tonight on this cold Friday night, sir?
I'm good, Mark. How are you doing this evening? Trying to stay warm, I'm sure.
Yeah, very happy to be inside. I'm kind of dreading my 25-minute walk back home a little bit, but I guess, as they say, it builds character. And you know what, Dave? Here's the thing. It's not 25 below zero.
Yeah, based on those terms, we're in a heat wave.
Yeah, exactly. If you could just always think about that, then you're in a good place. Dave, let's talk about your team here, obviously, and we'll start with the recent loss to number 10 Marquette, 92-73, the final score. No shame in losing to a top 10 team, but I listened to the post-game show with you and Zach and Dave Corzine. I loved what you were saying on that post-game show, and it was more of, and I'm just paraphrasing, and I'm going to let you discuss it, but it was more of, look, that's a tough team right there, but we need to be ready mentally for a team like that. Could you kind of talk about what you were thinking or saying to your team after that loss to a good Marquette team?
Yeah, well, one of the things that's happened over the course of the season thus far is I've been really, really proud of our guys in that each timeout, you know, hasn't been perfect. We've won, we've lost, we've done, you know, a few different things, but, you know, by and large, we've competed at a high level, learning how to win, learning how to close out games, not having, you know, negative droughts is something that you kind of try to work through. And what I was saying to Zach, and as you paraphrased after the game, was as good as Marquette is, and they can make you play really bad at times, mm-hmm. because of what they do on both ends of the floor, I'm not so sure, starting with the first two possessions of the game, that we played either physically, emotionally, or execution-wise the way that we had planned. And so that was probably sounded in my disappointment after the game, because we didn't give ourselves the proper opportunity to fight it out with an excellent team, with a guy that has star quality. So that's kind of how I reiterated it to Zach, and that was my feelings at the time.
Yeah, I mean, and I look at it, too, that, you know, you're going up against that team that is number 10 and maybe pound for pound a better team than your guys. But I think it's important that they know that that your team can be great, that they can, and they've proved it, that they can play with teams like that, and that they should be expected to win. Is it tough? Do you agree with that, and is it tough to get that point across to kids when they know that they're the underdog going into a game?
Well, you know, each one of the 30-some-odd games that you play become a chapter in the story of your season, and trying to understand motivation and preparedness and all those kind of things. And so, you know, I try to tell them, if you take, you know, an average of, let's say, 34, 35 games, and you span over a year, that's less than 10% of the time you're asked to compete. And so you'd like to think that emotionally, especially, you'd be ready. You know, it happens to almost every team where there was days, and we talked about it after the game in our next meeting. You know, throughout this league, there have been challenges by each one of the teams in our league. You know, it started at the beginning of the season with Villanova when they played Michigan, and they've been able to regroup, and on and on and on. And so, it happens as a coach at any level, at any sport. You try to prepare to make sure that it doesn't. And so what you try to do is, when it's going on, you try to make adjustments to try to counteract that. And then, you know, obviously where we're at right now is after the fact, you've got to be able to regroup and move forward and understand that game has to be behind you, and you learn a valuable lesson from it.
Talking to Dave Leto, the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons, on the Dave Leto Show. We'll give you some upcoming games for DePaul and when they are on the score, and tell you some things about the Blue Demons in just a little bit. So, Coach, you guys have six regular season games to go. You have the Big East tournament. How important is it to you to get that NIT bid? And I don't know if run the table is the right way to put it, but these are, you know, six winnable games when I look at the schedule.
Yeah, and you know, just look at how this league has shaped up thus far, and you know, at the top is Villanova, because they've, you know, used a lot of their talent, their experience to create winning situation, which they've been able to do for a number of years. And Marquette, even the preseason and during the season so far, has been, you know, regarded as one of the better teams, not just in the league but in the country. And then 3 through 10, it's a complete logjam. And so, you know, we're 5-7. We're one game out of third, and we're one game out of 10th. And so each and every game, as you mentioned, Mark, become critical, not just for your season and mounting wins, but as you prepare, you know, with only 6 games to go for the Big East tournament, you want to finish as high as you possibly can. You want to get some momentum. You want to do all those kinds of things. And understanding that, you know, over the course of that weekend, that a lot of things that can go on that would allow you to continue to play, not just in that tournament, but tournaments beyond that, whether it's the NCAA, NRT, or otherwise. And so, you know, we haven't talked about that. I refuse to kind of look at it in the way that I'm explaining it to you, because we've got to concentrate on the moment in hand, because if we don't, we'll never get to the opportunity that I think would await us.
All right, then let's do that. Let's kind of take it at one game at a time. DePaul does play Butler tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. It is a road game. We'll carry it here on 670 The Score. You lost to this Butler team on January 16th. It is such a fine line, as you said, with these teams. I guess, what went wrong in that game, and what adjustments need to be made to beat this Butler team tomorrow night on the road?
Yeah, it was a strange game in that, you know, we had prepared as we normally do, and then found out right at game time, you know, one of our starters, Jalen Butts, was injured and couldn't go. And so trying to make adjustments without practice time, without knowledge, was a little bit difficult. We ended up playing 5 guys, you know, in the realm of 36, 37 minutes apiece. We were up 40, 36 at half, and, you know, knew that we were playing well enough, but you know, wanted to make some adjustments. And then, you know, they scored 51 points in the second half, and it was partly because their offense is really hard to guard. They shoot the ball extremely well. And then we got fatigued. We got emotionally fatigued and physically fatigued and chasing them around and executing. So we didn't come out in the second half with the same kind of energy that we had in the first. And so, you know, that's the first thing we talked about. That's the first adjustment we had to make, is to make sure that we're sound in our preparation, both emotionally and physically. And then, you know, make the proper adjustments from one game to the next to understand what we need to do better, what we can, you know, sprinkle in there new or otherwise, or what kind of wrinkles we can give them that they haven't seen, to give ourselves a better chance to play well through 40 minutes.
You know, I have not been to a game at Butler. Is that that's the gym that they filmed Hoosiers in? Yeah.
Yeah. Hinkle Fieldhouse. It's a really historic, tradition laden building. And, you know, it speaks to Indiana basketball. And as you mentioned, the old state high school playoffs, those kind of things. So they get great fan support. The team has obviously been very good for a long period of time, and in different leagues that they've played in, and 2 national championship games that they've played in. So the crowd really gives them an energy boost. They tend to play a lot better offensively and defensively in their home. So it's a challenge. It has been a challenge for a lot of teams in this league.
We are talking to Dave Leto, the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons. We'll continue to talk about the team, discuss some individual things for the DePaul Blue Demons, and some upcoming dates as well, after a break here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
15 to shoot for the Demons. Between the legs with the dribble is Gage. Up high, Lujerby. He launches for 3. Femi hits his 3rd from downtown here in this first half. And DePaul is down by just 3 with 13 and a half minutes to go here in the first half.
He's been good. Welcome back into Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score is the Dave Leto Show, featuring the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons, that guy, Dave Leto. And Femi Olujabi has been, as you just heard the highlight with Zach Zabin, coach, he's been very good lately. As a matter of fact, Olujabi, 11 straight games in double digits. Why has he been so effective for you?
Well, you know, it's the first thing that allows you is consistency, and it's not just in scoring, but he's a very even-tempered young guy, and he comes to practice and treats the game the same every day. Doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. and works on his craft really well. He comes in early, he stays late, and you know, enjoys the fact that he is a low post option because he has a very good touch. But as you heard in the highlight there, can step out and face the basket, make shots as well. So, you know, very happy that he's been with us this year and great addition to our team, both on the court and off the court. And hopefully, you know, a big performance tomorrow and continue to do so throughout the rest of the season.
And all three remaining Big East home games at Wintrust Arena. The ticket packages start at $72, that is. Remaining home games against Creighton, Feb 20, St. John's, and Georgetown as well. Another guy, Coach Lato, that I wanted to ask you about too is Paul Reed, a guy that is super athletic. What has been kind of the key to his development?
Well, you know, I think the form is the same for a lot of guys. Just some do a little bit better than others, and that starts with a, you know, really good level of natural talent, which he has. He's long, he's athletic, he's got a really nice touch, he's got terrific hands, he's bouncy. And then, you know, secondly, you need an understanding of what it takes work-wise. And same thing I said about Femi. He's a guy that's not afraid to be in the gym and work on not things just that he does well, but a lot of things that he wants to get better at. And, you know, he has a thirst for that, and he's trying to be very, very dedicated to that. And, you know, he's very opportunistic because he's got a great nose for the ball. Offensive rebounding is something that a lot of people would like to do, but he does extremely well. And, up near the top of the Big East and rebound, and particularly on the offensive end, he gives us, you know, 3 to 4 extra possessions alone by just not being able to be boxed out. He's continued to improve his game, so he's been a good scorer around the basket thus far, but now you see him, you know, shooting more threes and more mid-range jump shots, which continue to add to his game. So I think the best is yet to come with Paul, in that as he continues to grow and get stronger and continue to grow emotionally and the things that are being asked of him, that you'll see him just get better and better and better.
Dave, you mentioned the offensive rebounds. I'm glad you did, because I always thought that offensive rebounding is an art form, because it's really not supposed to be done. It's something that I think oftentimes, not just in college but at the NBA level, it's conceded. Like players are not trying for the offensive rebound because they assume, and a lot of times it is true, the defensive player is just going to, by definition, have better position. What is the key to being a good offensive rebounder, and how much of that is it has to be coached and tell players to be determined to do it?
Yeah, I think at least 75%, if not more, is motivation. You know, you got to want to go after the basketball, and you got to want to do it consistently. And I think there are guys that do it, but the consistent part is, I think, that separates one from another. And then you've got to be able, you know, a little bit technical about it, where a shot goes up, you got to kind of read the rim and kind of figure out where the ball is going to land on one side of the basket or in front of the basket. And I think that takes film study and some other things too. But it's, and then you've got to be, you know, fleet of foot to get around people, or have a great solid and strength in your base, so that when somebody does try to box you out, you can get better position or spin around them. So there's some things natural that come with it. There's some things that guys, you learn through the process. But with a guy like Paul, it's more than anything, as I mentioned, it's just desire.
Yeah. I mean, so much of D is that, absolutely. One area that I know that you're trying to and you want to see tightening up on your team is three-point defense. And we know how important the three is in at all levels of basketball these days. Why hasn't that been as effective lately? And how do you make it better, the three-point defense?
Well, there's a number of things. Well, you know, we start out the season and thought, you know, because last year we didn't shoot the ball nearly as well from 3-point range either, that we were going to add, you know, that to our arsenal, and, you know, bringing in John Diener as a freshman, which we ended up redshirting him, and having Jalen Coleman Lands as an experienced guy who was redshirting to go along with what we had, I thought would really help us. His injury has cost us that, and so what we thought would have Jalen, Max and Eli, all three guys that can really shoot it on the court at the same time, allow us to spread the floor, got compromised because of the injury and you know, a little bit of a lack of depth there. So it allows teams to kind of focus in on Max, who's obviously our best guy at it, and then secondarily with Eli. And so Now you one of the strengths you get with Paul and Femi is great low post play, but the ball is inside the 3-point line now more than it is outside. So it takes away a lot of your opportunities and your attempts, and so some days we're a little bit better than others, but our attempts are not where anyone, or especially me, would like them to be, and then therefore your makes are not there either. So you know, this is a game, this time of not just the year, but the era that we're in, that you're going to have to shoot them. And so we got to continue to get better at it and address it on a year-to-year basis.
Do you like that the basketball in general has gone to that, as you said, you have to be able to shoot threes, you have to be able to defend threes. Do you, as a guy who's been around a long time, do you like that?
You know what? I've got one opinion of millions and millions, and so it really doesn't matter. But at the same point in time, being involved in basketball, you know, it's added an offensive and an excitement to the game, which I'm all for. The fans love it. So, you know, I've bought into it. You know, as I've said plenty of times to anybody who has the ability to listen to it, that I've been around long enough to know that defense and rebounding were always a staple. But that's kind of shifted to the degree that shooting three-pointers can win you games and leagues and championships. And Villanova and Marquette have proven that thus far. With combining defense with a great array of ability to shoot the three, and not just in how many you make, but how many you attempt each and every night. So it's part of it. The game's not going anywhere in terms of, you know, developing people that can shoot the three. And I think everybody who looks at it from a standpoint of success has to make sure that they include that in their recruitment and their teaching as well.
As Dave Lato, the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons, here on the Dave Lato Show, I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And one of those guys who is particularly adept at the three ball for you, coach, is Max Strus, top four, as a matter of fact, in the conference in three-point field goals. And first in the Big East in minutes played. I feel like every time I fill in for this show, we're talking about Max Strus, but why not? It seems like he's one of those guys that is constantly, as good as he is coming in, constantly getting better.
Yeah, you know, and again, we talked about it with Paul and with Femi, and it's never more true than with Max and his work ethic. And, you know, he's a guy that is extremely, extremely dedicated to this game and getting better every single day. And, you know, and he's got great stamina in his work ethic and great stamina during games, as you mentioned, because he plays so much, you rarely take him out of the game. And so, you know, his ability, not just as a three-point shooter, but as a rebounder, as a guy that makes good decisions with the basketball in his hands and gets to the free throw line, has become a really good option for us, you know, last year and again this year. And, you know, as we go, and people talk a lot about our low-post game, and rightfully so, but as Max goes, is how we'll go. And when he has really good nights, we tend to play really, really well around him. So, you know, hoping that will continue tomorrow night.
Dave, I'm going to let you go here, but I did want to congratulate you on your, and it's a little bit after the fact, your 100th game as a winner, as a head coach, after the win over Xavier last week. And what does that mean to you as a coach, that you have 100 wins in your pocket?
Well, you know, at DePaul, it's meant that I'd like to think we've got a pretty good love affair going between what I try to do every day, what I try to bring to our program and our young men, and teaching them the value of winning not just basketball games, but winning everything that they do. And numbers are numbers. You know, I've never gotten too much into that. As I tell people, I want to be known more for who I am and what I do than how many games I've won. I think, you know, that's a byproduct of all that. So I appreciate it. You know, it's something that I'll look back on many, many years from now and enjoy. But at the same point in time, it's the young men that we teach every day that I really value in terms of victories and what I'm able to teach them. So we're going to continue to work hard to get as many wins as we possibly can bring to this program. But you know, along the way, we have accolades like that, so I'm proud of that as well.
Well, Dave, I hope you get W's in your final six games. Good luck to you guys tomorrow at Butler. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks for having me, Mark.
You got it. That is Dave Lato, the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons. Hey, man, it's baby steps. One of these years, it's going to be DePaul's year where they're back. It's going to be like Loyola last year, where all of a sudden DePaul is is back and we're all going to go crazy. And I know that most people listening, younger people that is, don't know really what it's like when DePaul was at the top. Because it can be a college basketball town when DePaul is good, as it once was years and years and years ago. But it's fun. It's fun when DePaul is good, and I can't wait till the day that they are back in the NCAA tournament. It's been great tonight filling in for Lawrence Holmes and a little bit of Julie DeCaro as well. I'll actually be back on tomorrow afternoon, 2 until 5 p.m. with Julie DeCaro. So I'm looking forward to that, working with Herbie on Sunday, noon to 4. Thanks to Herb Lawrence for producing the show, along with Tony Gill. Thanks to Bruce Levine covering the Cubs and White Sox. Dave Leto as well. Also, my guy Mike Farron of MLB Network Radio and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Have a great weekend. I will talk to you tomorrow on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.